Just a quick warning, this podcast series contains discussions about crime, trauma, sexual abuse, drug use, and suicide. Listener discretion is advised. Dr. Zach Turner, welcome to the Stick Up.
Thank you. It's been a little bit of fun trying to get here finally, but I'm excited.
Mate, I tell you, when I first met you, I said to my partner, Mary, at the time, I said, that bloke, honestly, he's one of the most flamboyant, engaging person I've ever met, you know, one of the flamboyant, engaging people I've ever met. And then I met your talented partner, Alex, and I was just blown away. Like, born in Colombia, French, speaks five languages, and he's a very talented, I'll get caught up in this word, pianist.
That's it. That's it. And what the heck is he doing with me?
Yeah.
But we met 11 years ago now on a double date with our ex-girlfriends.
Yeah.
And I've always dated boys and girls, and he hadn't. And so I spent, 6 months. I learned how to run to try and do masculine things so I could get him out. And then burnt that house down a little bit and got Tarzan. So, but he
does look like Tarzan.
He definitely does. I mean, of course I was having dreams about Tarzan, but he doesn't remember anything about meeting me other than I had orange pants on, which I thought were rad.
Yeah. Orange is great color.
I think it's great. Yeah, totally. He was like, nah, not in for that. And meanwhile I was like enamored and next day broke up with my partner and then began 6 months of basically trying to woo this guy. And now he's pretty darn great. So,
all right, tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Where'd you grow up?
Gosh, I'm the eldest of five kids, missionary parents. So mum and dad have always worked I'm so lucky to have such amazing parents who are, didn't finish grade 9, either of them, but are highly evolved in terms of creating communities and conversations. So I was born in Toowoomba in T-Bar, and then we moved straight to Bourke.
Yeah.
And back of Bourke.
Home of Clive Berghofer.
That's Clive. I met Clive a couple of times back in the day. And
he's a philanthropist, isn't he, up that way?
He is. He's does lots of good stuff. I mean, he owns him and I don't even know if it's, I'm going to get confused whether it's the Wagner Group.
Wagner Group got the airport net up there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the Russians. Mm. Different. But they own a fair bit. But yeah, grew up there, lots and lots of Turners, hundreds of Turners in that area. That's my last name. And we're not Catholic, but just farmers who needed Xboxes, I reckon. But in grade 2 and 3, because we moved to Dalby, I had 6 Turner boys in grade 2 and 3 with me, cousins.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
definitely Catholics.
So I grew up basically on big farms, and my parents were working with big farmers who were very philanthropic and wanted to support underprivileged youth on the farms.
Yeah.
And so they would set up the programs to support the farmers. And, I mean, it was amazing growing up on farms in Bourke and Emerald and Rockhampton and all these country places, but then moved to the sunny coast for kind of teenage years.
When did you sort of show this, I don't know, you're one of the smartest human beings I've ever met in my life. When did you display, like, were you ever identified as it from a young age as, you know what I mean, for your intelligence?
I was certainly tall, was easy to identify. I was always doing lots of different things at school, and I guess I wasn't that great until I picked up a book, I think in grade 3 or 4, and read King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, and I just got enamored with the fantasy of kind of life. And I guess kind of, I think a lot of my approach to medicine comes a little bit from that mystical side of helping people and changing their perceptions about themselves. And so after that, thankfully I was so tall, I didn't get bullied, but some lunchtimes I would sit under the tree in in Emerald and read, I think I read Lord of the Rings when I was about in grade five or something. It took me a long time.
Mm. I read the porn version.
Lord of the Ring. Burning Ring of Fire. Yeah, I think that's a pop-up now, actually. I think you can see that one as a pop-up. And, but yeah, I was never the best, but I guess I was really happy at being 80% because I liked doing lots of different stuff. And I think I'm pretty much should be the pinup boy that if you stay at it long enough, you'll get there. I mean, I started uni really young and just kind of continued to
study. When you say young, how old were you when you started uni?
Well, I got homeschooled for high school.
Yeah.
It was way too
naughty. Do you reckon that was more benefit? Like, because would you recommend it, like homeschooling?
For lots of people, yes. I was very self-motivated and mum and dad wanted us each in grade eight to come home, do a year at home, make sure we didn't miss out on anything in primary school. Because we travelled a lot. I went to like seven different primary schools, lots of different towns, and mum and dad wanted us to do some aid work somewhere in the world. So we got some perspective. Mm. At the end of that, I went up to worked on the old Smoky Mountain, which is in Manila in the Philippines for a month.
How old were you then?
I was 12.
Yeah.
And the same height as I am now. I'm 6'5", so I kind of shot up and then got
6'5" at 12 years old. Is that like, wow, that's tall, man.
It's I mean, when I made some of the, oh gosh, the state team, I was like the fifth tallest.
Now this is what I want to backtrack a little bit. So you showed some really good sporting, you know, prowess at a young age too because of your height. Obviously basketball would have been one of them and beach volleyball, yeah?
Yeah, beach volleyball.
And you represented Australia in both, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. 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 Well, I in basketball several times and then went to all the it was in Australia that we had like the beach volleyball tournaments and I was a couple of years younger, but we came second, so that was second place is the first loser, I guess. So not as much fun. But, I mean, never have I been in a hotter sport and I was like this gangly young guy and they're just guys and girl babes everywhere. It was heaven. I didn't know what to do. I was like, what? And so I then didn't go back to school because I made a couple of sporting teams. It was just kind of too hard. And I'd get up at – growing up on farms and – having parents then still kind of that work ethic of getting up and having a process where you form habits is so good in teenagers. And our whole family were getting up at 4:30 or 5. And so I'd get all my schoolwork done by 6:30 and then go play sport. And then spent every year I'd go and do different aid work through Indonesia and Irian Jaya, so that West Papua New Guinea. And would just find different people that were doing that. And because I was working minimum wage as a youth and then would head off overseas. So it really, I had an amazing time. And I sometimes do wonder what my parents were kind of thinking, letting me just
go go to West Papua. People are getting heads chopped off up there.
It was, we had some hectic experiences. We were trying to build a runway in some of the really remote areas, and when we were leaving, we walked down this path for like kind of a day, and then we all got arrested by the Indonesian police there because we found out later that they was a mass grave, and they'd actually and we had cameras and stuff, and so all got chucked in the back of a military van or truck rather, and ferried back to the main kind of camp, because at that point it was, and it's still such a volatile place because there's just no local people in parliament. All the locals lost all their businesses and everything as it's almost got repopulated. And I don't think we want to go into the political situation there for now, but gosh, it was an eye-opener. And sadly, lots of the people that really helped us and were part of it later on got arrested and we never really heard from them again. Crazy.
That's really sad because that's obviously, you have a lot of empathy and compassion that's shown through the work you do, you know what I mean? You're very kind and generous person with your time, you know, and I found that I've been on the receiving end of that myself and I'm grateful for that. mate, where does that come from? Has it come from your parents or what? Do you think?
Definitely my parents. Definitely my parents. My parents are, they are a fascinating pair, and it's great that they had their 40th wedding anniversary this year. And, yeah, they're inspiring. And, I mean, just for an example, we have a family group chat, and probably 2 weeks ago we get this message being like, Dad, with these two young Israelis, that he's like, oh, they're moving in for 10 days because Dad got chatting to
them. Are they the ones they found at Bunnings?
At Bunnings, yeah, at Bunnings. And so Dad's like, oh, you can't do your van out like this. I'll help you do the roof. Mm-hmm. And so we've always had this mentality of helping out wherever we can, and that's, yeah.
Not enough of that's done these days, is it? People overlook the bloke or woman struggling. I think if we were more like that, what a better world we live in, that person that's just current, you know, freezing cold. Man, wow. What good people.
They really are, and I think it's, can't say enough good stuff about them, and they have been great. I mean, my mum is still a bit of a babe. And
still a bit of a pain.
But she still looks like my sister. She's amazing. But she had five kids at 25 in the bush in Burke. Like, you see photos. I'm like, you're a child. Like, I mean, I don't even know. Like, I look at, I'm like, gosh, the things you get from your parents. But with people having kids later, it's such an interesting thought process that the things I was partway through like my second or third uni degree at that point, and working and playing sport, selfish as all get out, like just doing exactly what I wanted to do. True, I'd go and do aid work, but the reality is that for the first 1 or 2 months when you go and do humanitarian work, you are totally taking. You're not an effective asset so you have to go to those places for a while. And so, yes, I did a lot of that, but I really have to acknowledge the amazing people that are there all the time, that were willing to take in a young guy, true, that was kind of interested, but I wasn't particularly useful. Mm. I mean, I could do some outreach stuff. Mm. I mean, now that I'm more and more qualified, it becomes a lot easier. Sure. But, yeah, it's definitely a paying it forward kind of mentality. So,
it's beautiful. Yeah. When did your interest in medicine, when did you kick that off? When did that, was it from a young age, like, were you like cutting rats up and stuff like that and trying to put them back together, or what? What's the deal? What?
I think my dad was a builder, and one of my brothers is a builder, and so I like sort of growing up and building homes, and I mean, my parents were moving around a lot, and there was just never money, so we were always working out on the house and helping mum and dad out. So it was always that kind of physical repair side. Mm. So I really went into medicine, or originally thinking surgery, and very much trained in orthopedics, and was going to go down that trauma side because of the aid work. Mm. And
you would have seen a lot of lost limbs and stuff like that, wouldn't you?
The on a daily basis in some of the hospitals and stuff when I was in like the Congo and Cape Town and doing different things, like what you see on a daily basis is, I mean, from an interesting point of view, it's the coolest kind of surgeries that you'd only get once or twice a year in Australia. Mm. But over there, it's happening.
Would you get excited about a surgery like that? Like, you know, when I say excited, would it challenge you?
Mm. Yeah.
Is that what you'd get excited about, the challenge? Like
the challenge, but also you're fixing. I mean, I didn't go necessarily into medicine, and even think about medicine when I was younger. I was really lucky that I knew, and I had a bit of a drive about what I wanted to do, and I would write it down from a young age. I would go, cool, this is what I want. This is the steps to do it.
Journaling is that what you're saying? I encourage journaling. Journaling's so good for goal setting. And
it's amazing, but also just to remember the good things that's happened and like give a bit of thanks for that. Mm. I'm trying to rediscover it at the moment because life, and we're going to go into this, but like life gets in the way, and then you start to forget the things that made you who you were. And you lose a lot of those great processes.
Who was it? Can I go back on that? What were the things that make you who you are? Give us five of them.
Five of them. Look, obviously you have your DNA and genetics, But that's such a tiny part because most, I mean, humans share 99% of the same stuff. So it's your epigenetics, it's the experiences and the processes. And I guess my parents growing up in the bush, no TV, always doing stuff outdoors and kind of finding interests. I mean, it's going to be an interesting process. And if you look at the way our brains are changing over the last 50 years in regards to having computer screens there and our hippocampus, which is one of the parts of our brain that looks at processing information, it's growing a lot. But whether there's going to be a change with the ability for people to find interesting things and entertainment for themselves without
a phone.
Yeah.
People are lost.
Yeah. Like, and I was always very active and racing around and chatting, and I was half the time in trouble because I was always talking to bloody everyone all the time. And so I think the saving thing for probably having five kids was being in the bush and being like cubbies and all the rest of it and pets and cows and all the things that you kind of do on big farms. And so, I mean, one of the farms in Bourke, Darling Farms, from the people living on there, the school that went from like preschool to grade nine, I think there was 110 kids at one point.
On one farm?
On one farm.
How many acres was that?
40,000 with cotton. Mm. And then they had a whole lot of other bits and pieces. And they, I mean, amazing family that so generous and really instilled a lot of that generosity. And they were really community focused. Like Grandma Buster used to like cook up.
What is the name, Grandma Buster?
Grandma Buster, yeah. And they came from the US. Oh, she was just a delight. And lots of those great role models, you go, these people are the soul of the earth. This is what community and culture should be about.
You talk about 3 degrees. What degrees did you get? What have you got? What are you qualified in?
I finished school pretty young from homeschooling, and I was traveling, so kind of kept on sending in exam papers and things so I could keep getting Centrelink while I was overseas. So my first one was actually theology.
Yeah.
And then I was, as I say, I was a missionary in the Congo, for goodness sakes, for a while. And I often say that in my defense, I thought of it more as kind of a position in a profession. We'll see if my mum likes that joke. So I did that, but I studied apologetics, which is history of religion, which is really fascinating. And I kind of nearly got there, but I knew I wanted to do medicine because I knew I wanted to do a few different things in life. And I always liked presenting and I didn't really love, I mean, I love theatre and acting.
Mate, I've seen a few of your performances. You're a very talented actor.
Oh, that's
especially musicals.
I always play the villain normally.
I've done that too. It's overrated.
It's overrated. Yeah, it's I think I probably only got the roles though because I was the only person taller than the main female lead.
Okay.
So one of the times they call me up, they're like, look, you're the only person who's taller, I hadn't even auditioned. They were just like, we've got a really tall Belle. Could you please be Gaston or the Beast? We just need someone who's taller than Belle. But I thought, no, med is something that I like fixing broken things. And I never really did it to work necessarily with sick people. I like proactive people who take ownership of their health. And one of the things I sort of struggle with is that lots of people just think, oh, that's the doctor's job. Like I'm going to just handball it off there. And with my patients, don't tolerate a lot of that because you have to know about it. Like medicine without knowledge and intention is just not going to work anywhere near as good.
Yeah, I love working with a doctor. Like I'm really active. I like looking after myself and I'm looking for ways. Thank you. I'm looking for ways to sort of improve my health, you know, and I love working with a doctor with that attitude.
Well,
Isn't it one of yours? You're a biochemist as well.
Yes, I did biomedical science, and so worked in biochemistry and so drug formulation.
Okay.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, that's why I'm fun at parties. If I can't prescribe it, I can make it.
Allegedly.
I'm doing the diploma in psychedelic and hallucinogenic medicine.
That's the future.
There's lots of future things.
Do you reckon the future's in that, like as in dealing with mental health and that sort of stuff? I think the runs are on the board.
Well, it's obvious that what we're doing is not touching the sides. Mm. And I think we have to change our complete process around this and go, look, the brain is an organ. It needs blood flow. It needs nutrients like any muscle group. But then it also needs training. And it's not just working it out and just doing strength training like your body needs. It also needs cardio and stretching. Mm. And I think we're just looking and finding out. I think medicine is finally trying to catch up to science, because the thing about medicine and lots of these with anything that you're dealing with people is first do no harm. And so there's a lot of fear that you don't want to try new things because there's not enough evidence out there, which is true. But lots of the medical textbooks, when I first started science, we were reading biomedical science. We were reading from textbooks which were written 20 years earlier. But science, like, is jumping forward so fast. So, and then the whole concept of quantum physics and physics and biophysics and biohacking.
And that AI about, to add to that.
Enormous. And there's so many cool things that medicine is really slow to the mark. In some areas, we're getting better and we're pushing forward. But I guess with any kind of tightly held knowledge bank where there's a lot of people that have attained this knowledge and try and do it respectfully and in the correct way, it takes a lot of work to steer that ship in a different direction. I really wanted to study medicine in France. I really wanted to learn French. Mm. And so I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do nursing. I was in the Aussie team for basketball at that point. I was like, cool, I'll do nursing because then I can work in France and do medicine. And I'd been to the Congo and worked there for 6 months, which was an insane period. And I worked in the north part. I kind of flew in to one of the big cities that was getting blown up at that point, jumped on a boat and went across to Brazzaville on the other side of the river. Mm. Then went up north there, worked in helping build a hospital in the morning and then the clinic in the afternoon. And I guess I was doing biomedical science by that point and still not particularly probably very useful because I hadn't done nursing and these other things, but I was doing a lot of the outreach around vaccinations.
You've done that with the intentions of going into medicine as sort of solidifying and putting a real good foundations in your medical group. Is that what you wanted to do? Do you wanted to combine the both? Was that your intention?
Yeah. It was always – I was always –
you wanted to know why and how.
Exactly.
Combine.
And that's where the biomed – stuff started. I guess I partly did.
That's a great combination, don't you think? Because a lot of doctors don't even know what they're prescribing.
No, or haven't tried lots of the different parts to it. And I don't go and say, go and try every single medication, but you need to know what you're doing and the effects of it. And I always say to my patients, like, the minute I stop looking like you want to look in some sort of aspirational way. If I start getting, like, you don't go to an overweight trainer. You don't go to someone with terrible hair to get your hair cut.
No.
So going to someone for wellness and for proactive prevention and proactive performance, I would not be going to someone who hasn't been trying things.
And that's what you specialize in these days, isn't it? You know what I mean? With that sort of thing. And I am going for a stage with you at the moment. We've got our bloods done. We're about to do something. And I want to do a before and after with you because, you know, I am that guy. I want to live forever. I'll be quite honest. It's only been the last 5 or 6 years when I've dealt with my trauma. And part of that trauma journey recently was psychedelics.
Yep.
Bang. new level. This year has been the best stage of my life, mental health wise. After I'd done, like, I was only 3 sessions, you know.
Well, you don't need lots. I mean, some of the stuff that will probably work out in some of my theories around, like, the way our synapses are created in our brain and how when we're young, they're more malleable and they get less and less malleable as we get older, sadly, because if you think about it, nothing about evolution says that we should be fun, fit, lean, horny, and 40. We should be young, dumb, full of
cum.
You said it.
Anywhere you want it to be.
Totally. That's evolution. There's nothing about, I mean, we now, like when I was a nurse 20 years ago, like 75 was a good innings. Like you could retire at 65, tolerate your partner moderately, like your children die at 73, and you're like, oh, well done.
Yeah, you get 13 years after retirement.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm shit.
And now, like in 20 years, we've moved 20 years on, and it's going to be choices that we're making in our 40s and 50s that are the difference between being that 70, 75-year-old who's traveling and having fun and still exercising and being strong. This is the thing. Staying strong, staying fit will be what helps you to go long and be healthy.
I tell me about this. Like, look at guys, right, and you go to gym, big, muscly guys and everything like that, and they go, mate, you got to be on all of this. You got to be on Tesh, you got to be on Anavar, you got to be on all this. Is there any other way to get them sort of builds without?
Oh, I mean, totally. But I guess the other thing is working out what you actually want. I mean, when you go to the gym and you chat to lots of people, I mean, there's a reason why you don't see roided up gym junkies at 60, and that's because they're dead. I mean, the biggest thing that I try and do is never sacrifice your future for your present. And lots of these people don't understand and they want results now. And I understand, I want results now.
Yeah, same. I want everything yesterday.
I mean, one of the reasons why I did biomed is that I, biomedical science, is that I went bald all of a sudden. And I was like, stuff this. I'm not going to go bald. So then I started working out ways and the different facets, because we all focus often on one pathway to do things. And for people in the gym, it's often just testosterone. But high levels of testosterone is not great, because these sorts of hormones are ubiquitous. They bind to receptors that are good and bad. So a far better way to do this is when I chat to people, I'm like, yeah, look, yes, you can get these results, but one at the detriment of what in a few years? Because I see so many patients who have been doing this. Yeah, they're ripped. Amazing. Haven't had an erection 5 years. Who fucking cares? That'd kill me. What's the point?
Yeah, that's not living.
No. So the thing is
people, I've had 3 today. No, I'm changing.
And morning glory. And I chat to people, I'm like, well, one, anything that could have an effect that, and essentially our bodies are lazy, like I said before. They're not designed to kind of keep doing things, that they pick up patterns. And if you give it something exogenously from outside your body, it will go, oh, it's there, I'm going to stop making it.
Yeah, yeah. That's in regards to your testicles shrink when you start injecting, you know, testosterone. I can be a testament that I've had balls like sultanas at times, and it's not sort of rewarding when your girlfriend has a bit of a look at them and goes, where's your balls?
No, I mean,
I've abused steroids. I remember going to see a doctor once, and he said, "What are you taking?" I told him. He said, "Mate, you're a stroke waiting to happen." And this bro science is a killer. That's what's killing a lot of these blokes. A lot of blokes going to the gyms and just trying to work it out themselves, and not going to someone like yourself,
and not feeling like they can chat to someone, because at the same time, lots of GPs and doctors don't know about it and haven't tried these sorts of things and haven't done these sorts of things. I mean, there's not many things that I probably haven't tried and or made and know about, because at the end of the day, you get great effects from parts of the testosterone, but you've got an androgenic and you've got an anabolic part, just like you're a teenager. So, yeah, you get growth, but you also get anger and all these other things. And then the other part is you don't even know how much you need. You might have had the same clinical results. You could be on a quarter. And you don't even know, because everyone just starts off on 250 milligrams of SUS once a week, and then they do it for 12, 16 weeks. And, it's great for the first time. They have a little bit of a trough afterwards.
And then the receptors work it out, and it's not the same as second.
Well, often correct? Not the same as second, but if you do it in your 30s, it's going to recover faster than your 40s. But we're living until 90. Mm. Like, I mean, what's the point of getting to 70 now and having 20 years of being decrepit and old and having all these other things? And high test is bad for all, I mean, arteries, your heart. There's nothing healthy about having a high test. Mm. And we focus so much on one thing. Mm. But you've got, like, growth hormone and you've got tons of other receptors from thyroid and having high cortisol and not sleeping and then just having proper vitamin levels.
Yeah.
But also staging these things so that you target multiple things. Like, we just burn receptors. I mean, I always say it's very similar to like type 2 diabetes where you burn out your insulin receptors because you've got high levels all the time. Mm. Well, your receptors get sick of being high. And so they're like, oh, well, it's going to be high forever. So they stop being as effective.
Yeah.
And so you'll get a less and less effect. Yes, by 70-ish, we will need some amount of tests, but there are ways to do things far healthier.
Manipulating, like you talked to me, you've told me about, like I was talking about my visceral fat. My visceral fat's the stud on your stomach, on your lower stomach. Some doctors will tell you the only way you're going to get rid of that is through liposuction. And you've told me a couple of things, and I've done the 2 weeks of fasting. I can feel it reducing already. Like, bang, 24-hour fast, one cup of coffee in the morning. Man, I felt like at that 24-hour mark I was on fucking coke or something. Like, I was charging. I was, my energy level's through the roof.
Exactly. Well, if you think about evolution, I mean, if you go out, try and hunt, and turns out you're a crap hunter, or you don't catch anything that day, you go home hungry. And then the next day, you can't just become a gatherer all of a sudden. So your body gives you a growth hormone and a testosterone release when you have that. So the next day, you're like, bam, cool. I have to go hunt something now.
Yeah.
And that's that physiological effect. And remember that, like, we often go I've studied the Bible and lots of things where it's like, we've been around for 12,000 years, whatever, it's crap. But the point is that we've got lots of the same organs and teeth and nails as dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean, we share so much of our DNA. And then we have our little juvenile conscious mind that came around maybe 70 to 100,000 years ago, who's a new kid on the block, making these decisions cognitively when you've got all of these other organs and your adrenal system, which, I mean, lizards, dinosaurs were chased. They had to have adrenaline. We've had adrenaline for a long time. These sorts of things are going to kick in. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of hallucinogenics and psychedelics are so important, because if you go and try and approach a really difficult situation, yes, cognitively you can talk yourself through it, but at the end of the day, you're competing with your juvenile brain against a very mature adrenal system. Mm. But if it kicks in, there's no way you're not going to be able to compete against a fight or flight response. Mm. And so what these can enable you to do is look at the process differently or from a different perspective, which is some of the ketamine therapy and some of the things coming out as well. But they also help your brain to make new pathways around those difficult experiences so that you can bypass that adrenaline anxious response.
I'd done a bit of ketamine therapy. That was what I'd done over Christmas time. Man, I'm telling you, my life since that, I can't recommend it enough. Like, I'd done some serious trauma. I had a couple of relapses back in the drug use because my trauma, my PTSD was kicking in, and bang, I went and done it, man. I'm telling you, people are like, I'm focused right now. I'm so focused. My mental health is it's the best it's ever been. Nothing even close to it how it is now. I'm bouncing out of bed. The journaling, you know, gratitude, intentions for the day, cold showers, I'm massive on them. Yep. They just turn my motor on, you know. Yep. And going to sit in, I go and sit in a cafe of all the construction workers just to get to be grateful and to be grounded and go, you know what, I'm glad I'm not on a building site today. I'm glad my phone's in my office. I can meet interesting people as such as yourself. Talking of interesting people, you know, a lot of famous people come to you for their treatment. I'm not expecting you to tell you because, you know, you've sworn to secrecy and most probably arrest. But what do they come to you for?
Oh, gosh. I guess part of it is that I always say, look, I'll stop prescribing and making different things when I stop taking them.
Mm.
And so it's not just something that just all of a sudden one minute I didn't have people talking about these sorts of things, the next minute there's a whole lot of people that have a notoriety. But I think part of it is that over the years that I've known them, they've seen that I work pretty hard,
And you're one of the most hardest working people I've ever met. Like, you are on the, mate, your life is just planes, trains and automobiles. Well, no trains, but planes and trains. Planes and cars and automobiles. But you were just on the go, mate. You don't stop your phone, your work and everything. It's like, wow.
It's, and I guess this is something that I've been learning because you spend a lot of your life.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but your intentions are to fix people. What a great intentions. Like, that's stayed with you since you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So you work all them hours with your intentions. What a great intention. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's something that I guess I'm learning because a lot of intentions are just that.
Mm.
And you spend a lot of your life building up patient clientele, and then you go, actually, what am I doing this for? So a lot of my self-discovery the last while is having come through being very busy and having lots of things going, but I started forgetting a lot of the processes and habits that made me healthy and able to sustain those sorts of things, because being busy, and I've been far too busy in my life at different times, and chasing and hustling and things is not something that I necessarily want to do. I fell into that trap of that rat race in a lot of ways because I stopped putting a priority on myself. And lots of doctors do this. Lots of people in the health profession get a savior complex. And this is a really, I mean, there's a good and a bad side to this. And I definitely have flirted with the really unhealthy side, where probably now I'm realizing a lot of the things that I thought I could get by hustling, I would have had a lot easier time if I had have just paused, gone back to my journal and gone back to the things that I used to do before you get into, and I mean, there's been a pandemic and lots of stuff, and we were in a big growth phase for our business. We had lots of clinics and things, and then you go kind of from overnight to this massive growth to then going, wow, you could be broke in 2 months if you don't shut things down. And so it puts things in perspective a lot, and I think that having that intention is good and it's really important, but finding self-love for you, I mean, charity starts at home.
Yeah.
And if you don't start having self-love and respect and going, no, I'm not, like, yes, this person is famous and yes, there's a need, but there's always going to be one.
You've got to have boundaries with those people.
Totally. Well, I think, I mean, you have to have boundaries with everyone.
I agree.
And I lost those boundaries because I stopped doing the things that were for me, like the meditation, like exercise in the morning. I always say the things that matter most in your life you have to do first in the day.
Yeah.
So you get up, you make love or whatever else, or do that after of a make or spark or whatever else.
Yeah.
Do exercise, meditation.
After you make love after you've made love.
That's it.
You make love after you've had sex.
Well, that's all cuddle or go to the gym and a bit of anger. But it's but I think that one of the things we sacrifice on is we keep going, oh, I'll do that later in the day, I'll do that later in the day.
Yeah.
The things that matter most to you have to happen first.
Yeah.
And I guess medicine, and you go and call, and like medicine in a lot of ways is a crazy cult where you get put through this baptism of fire, and there's like, and it's getting better, but there's a lot of this. Like, I mean, I've done so many shifts where it's like 36, 48 hours, which is not healthy in any possible way at all.
No.
And yet it was like you have to do this to kind of make it.
Yeah.
And I think lots of doctors become unhealthy and disillusioned, and it takes a long time to come back from that, because self-love is going, cool, let's stop and listen to what's going on here, because you keep giving in these environments, but the tank is never going to keep just being filled all the time unless you're filling it yourself.
What fills your tank?
Now it is and has been over the last while. I mean, and it's been a rough 6 months because I was doing so much, and I'm very ADD spectrum. So
picked it.
That's it. I went on all the different meds and then I kind of didn't use them correctly, which I think they should be used to complete tasks and then have a break. All I did was just do more and do more and do more. And so I went off everything because I'm doing some stuff for a couple of TV shows where I had to do brain testing and all these other things. And looking at how different medications, even though they get you to be more functional in different capacities, there's always the other side of the coin. For anything, any medication that does something that has an effect can have an equal side effect or an equal negative part. And I think that lots of people are like, oh, I'm distracted and I'm not getting lots of stuff done. Well, yes, but that's probably because you're not taking the time to listen to your body, slow down a bit and actually make the right choices rather than go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And for me, that's what I did. And so this year's been really, really, really hard because I went off all my meds I've been on for a few years. And then, and for the process for that, I was scattered, so scattered for like a month or two, really, really scattered. And then you go, wow, I'm struggling to get up at even 7 o'clock in the morning to do exercise. And for me, that was a real wake-up call because I've always loved waking up early. So this whole year has literally been a gut bust and it has been awful. And I was just saying that finally this is the first week after like 6 months of slowly working back at it. And it, I mean, 10 minutes every kind of couple of weeks to get earlier. And so today I finally woke up before my alarm at 4:30 for the first week that this has happened 2 days in the week. But gosh, it has been to get habits back, keeping habits, keeping things going is so much easier than losing them and starting them again.
But for your achievements, like through what you've achieved in 3 degrees, you would have had to have pretty good habits, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had great habits. I mean, part of that's from sport and farming. You get up early, you do the things first up.
Yeah.
And thankfully I had all those. They got me through med school and everything. And now I'm at the point where I'm finishing off my GP specialty as well as my ACRM specialty, which is a rural remote, kind of like the MacGyver specialty. So you can kind of do a bit of surgery and a bit of everything.
Yeah, cut a leg off.
Oh, like, yeah, I mean, like just for fun though. But you can do lots of stuff. Yeah. And so I'm finishing this and I'm back going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm back studying up like 20 years. I mean, true. And I'm doing a PhD as well in some other bits and pieces on the very slow burn. But I think one of the biggest things is we all think you have to make drastic changes to get a big result. And one of the biggest things I say, look, if you can target a number of different things at a 1%.
But ADD will allow you to do that. That's the advantage of having that. And that's what I find. I've definitely got it. I can solve 5 different problems at once. I can have 5 different conversations at once too.
Totally, but my realization a little bit is that I think people with ADD, I love that I've got the energy and I don't really have the dips and I have a bit of a hyper focus. But I think that I thought I was achieving a lot, even though I started lots of things, I didn't finish many. And the things I finished, I probably should have finished on the day that I started it, but it took me 6 months to come back to it. Yeah. And then I give myself a high five going, I did something. And I was like, that was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I've delayed it. And so that's when some of the meds have been really helpful. But I don't think we should be on them all the time.
Yeah.
I think you pick your days, do it, and then go, okay, well, I've done those tasks now. Because it also reduces a lot of your creativity as well.
I am. What do you think? Majority of doctors are overprescribers or underprescribers?
Oh, golly. The mentality in medicine has definitely swung different ways a lot, and it's
the pharmaceutical companies try to influence that.
Definitely. Less so directly now, but more so around like people talking about weight loss and everyone jumping on things like Ozempic and different medications that reduce your hunger. Well, I mean, any medication that is going to reduce your hunger and essentially put you in a starving mode, and I say this to lots and lots of women and more women than guys, is that your body's picking up patterns. And just like athletes have a muscle memory, you build up a stomach memory, and your body's not designed to be in starvation or have a reduced amount of calories in being calorie deficit, unless you have to lose lots of weight for a long time, or what you'll end up doing is you're slowing down your metabolism. So when you come off these meds, you're going to put the weight back on.
Yeah.
So it's about going, cool, what are my objectives? What's my trajectory? What is my horizon going to be for my health? And that's what I like to work out with people, because I go, yeah, you can look at your pathology results and there's a big spectrum of normal.
Mm.
If we cared about humans like we like, or cars like we care about our blood tests, you'd have like burning wrecks everywhere by the side of the road.
Yeah.
Because we tolerate this huge spectrum of normal, and people look at this trajectory going up or down without changing things. And so I think we have to start going, cool, no, this is the future that I want. These are the things I'm going to start doing. And I'm going to make incremental changes that really don't have to be huge. Like, I'm not talking about jumping on loads of different meds, but a whole lot of one percenters over a few years rather than going back half a percent on each different area. If you break your life into, like, I mean, energy and immunity, sleep, skin, hair, sex, performance, recovery, psycho-spiritual, any of these things, if you want to have them later in life, you're going to have to start practicing. It's not just training your body.
Yeah.
If you want to have a good brain later on in life, you need to set the foundations. That's going to the gym, that's doing things. And one of the things I say to patients, if you want to go slowly backwards over the next 10 years, do it 2 times 30 minutes a week. If you want to go slowly forwards over 10 years, incrementally, do it 3 times a week. If you want to jump a level and go from being base level to it being an okay in strength or cardio or concentration, these things take time and you need to prioritize. You can't just think that, oh my gosh, and I talk to patients or they're like, oh my dick's not working. And I'm like, well, have you been practicing? Like, you just think that it's just going to keep working? You don't go and not play sport for a whole long time and then think, oh great, I'm going to do that. And we have these expectations that it's just going to work. It's not going to keep working. And I want to keep having sex well into my hundreds.
Same.
So I'm going to have to get everyone else to at least like 90 or 100 just to be an outlier.
Because I know you're passionate, like something's like, I remember someone saying, a friend of mine saying to you about, you talk about that, you're saying, you know, you asked, I think the question you asked is, what sort of coffee do you have? And they said almond. And you sort of give them the breakdown on why almond milk is so bad. Oh, man, I've turned off it this morning. I'm to oats now, if that's any better. But you know, you talk about the chemicals involved in producing almond milk.
Well, not only the chemicals, I mean, environmentally it uses more water than any of the other non-cow milks and it has the least amount of health benefits.
Mm.
And so in the last 20 years, we now have all these people jumping on social media, coming across as an authority when really they've got no experience, they've got no science backing, and we're talking about a huge shift. And I think it's going to level out, and I hope it will, because lots of people have been given platforms. I mean, you look at the US and how polarized the US is, and Australia is becoming like that because we are. I mean, I don't know even what my past history of searches were online. No one has that information. So no one has the information of what I've been marketed to. And it can be very insidious, a lot of the stuff that you get. And I did a video maybe a week ago about all these people talking about oats being bad for you. I'm like, well, I mean, yes, lots of things could be bad for you if you have too much.
Yeah.
And if you don't have things in the right way. This is oats for breakfast. I'm like, oats are fantastic for breakfast. I love oats for breakfast.
Porridge is my favourite breakfast.
Totally. But if you're going to have it with like cream and milk and all the other bits every single day of the week, like, I mean, nutritious things have low calories with high nutrients.
Mm.
And I think we often go, oh, I'm doing things really healthy. I'm having a 7-day juice cleanse. I'm like, look, if you're meant to have 40 carrots a day, you'd be born a rabbit. Like that's, if you can eat 40 carrots, good on you. Mm. You get the fiber and everything else. Hopefully we're reverting back to a process where we're taking a bit more ownership. And I like that lots more patients are coming in and are Googling things. Hopefully they're not diagnosing themselves, because it's good to have information, but you need to be able to process that information and how it relates to you, because what works for me is not going to work perfectly for you.
Because your somatotype, yeah. The different somatotypes will create different results, won't it? Somatotypes, we've got three different types of somatotypes, haven't we?
Yep.
Endomorph, mesomorph, and ectomorph.
Yeah.
And you can't change your somatotype. You can't say, well, I'm an endomorph, I want to be an ectomorph. Everyone wants to be. An ectomorph is high muscle density, low fat, wide shoulders, small hips. An endomorph, narrow shoulders, wide hips. That's what I learn in my cert for. I'm just trying to sound like a doctor. I'm sorry.
No,
that was my doctor moment.
I mean, you're nailing it, actually. That sounded pretty convincing. I mean, no one's here asked me for my qualifications. So it could be just found me on the street. I think that and then there's a combination. And as we do more DNA testing, we'll be able to go, cool, well, these are my the DNA that I've got. Yes. In some ways, we can change some of these things up in a healthy way over time. But there's benefits and negatives to both. I mean, it'd be interesting to have a look at over time, and I don't know this off the top of my head, but lifespan compared to, I mean, tall people who are potentially ectomorphs with lots of muscle, and then compared to different body types, and what that says about your health. The other part that we're just delving into is the complexity of our gut health and the complexity of the bacteria in there and the trillions.
Do you reckon
bacteria.
That's right? Like a lot of research now is indicating your health comes from, you know, your gut health. Your mental health comes from your gut health. Everything comes from your gut health. Do you attest to that?
Totally. Well, I guess the biggest thing is that nutrients have to be found in the food. First off, and then they have to be the right ones for you. So one, if it's not found in green leafy vegetables and meat anymore, like B12 for lots of people are deficient in these sorts of things, you then have to break it down, absorb it, and then it has to circulate. And then you have to have the receptors for it. And people have, I mean, just like we have different external characteristics, we have different gut bacteria that are going to be predominant at different times. And so settling those things down and working out how we digest and process and ferment different foods is going to be and it's already a huge industry, but that will be a massive part of how. But there's a lot of studies looking at optimizing gut health and people who are on a spectrum of a disorder changing their rating on that spectrum drastically just by improving their absorption of different things and reducing a lot of the inflammation. Everything, in my opinion, is about the inflammation that's going on. And this is about getting so many different – we're continually bombarded with information and food and sugars and all of these different things. And our bodies are often really hyper-reactive. Combine that with some cortisol and our bodies become very – unable to process lots of things like they even would just because you feel sick in their guts because you've had six coffees because you had to get a thing done first thing in the morning. Those sorts of things are not good for long-term health. And I think we're going to have to start looking at those parts a lot more. And hopefully we will get far better testing mechanisms so that we can go, cool, not only have we got this genetic testing, we've got these epigenetics, we've got your family history, we've got what you can absorb, we've got your blood type, we've got these pillars. Now let's start building a structure that makes sense and that has a good foundation so that you can stop worrying about lots of these other parts. Because I see patients come and see me and they think they're doing the right things. I mean, everyone wants to be happy and healthy and have this great life. And a lot of people try really hard, but they're not absorbing the nutrients they think they're getting.
Yeah. My foot, I got a foot and I was full of arthritis. I was full of arthritis, right? And I got one of those 75IU hemotropin growth pens.
Yeah.
By the end of that 75IU, I haven't had arthritis since. And the bloke told me, he said, this is off the record. I'm going to help you do this off the record. So the doctor took a bit of a chance because it was buckling. I couldn't even put a shoe on.
Yeah. Look, those sorts of things, I mean, all of these levels go down over time. And there is no doubt we recover better when we're younger. And so the key thing is, though, if you're going to be doing those sorts of things, is making sure you know your levels and you use.
When you say levels, like that word blood testing for it to see what.
Yeah,
blood if there's testing. Any cancer markers.
Well, not any cancer markers, but seeing what your levels are to see whether, one, are you still producing it? Could we just use maybe a type of peptide or other product?
Mm.
And peptides are chains of amino acids that if you've got less than 50, it's a peptide. More than 50, it's a protein.
Mm.
So fragments of proteins, but they're easier to make because they're smaller and they're more stable. So we're making, and this is where medicine will go. And
you think that's the way that they're going to, the medicine's headed towards the use? Because remember, a few years ago, peptides were a really bad word. Like when remember Cronulla football team, I was like, oh, this is a big no-no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean.
Were they doing a bad thing, do you think, at the time?
Well, I think with lots of people doing it. So we're always trying. I know I say, look, I'm going to help you to cheat at life. Like when I wrote a book, I'm going to call it Doctor's Guide to Cheating at Life because at the end of the day, we want to optimize ourselves. And if we aren't professional athletes and there's not restrictions in place, then you're not breaking your own code of conduct.
Mm.
What happens with these, with a lot of the things that went on in Australia is that not only were they knowingly taking things that they knew were banned, but one of the things is actually they were falsifying the names. And these are still scheduled medications. Mm. You need to have a script. You need to have a doctor to write out the script. If it was completely fine, to do it, and look, and a lot of them are injectables and things as well. So, I mean, you're just crazy to go and grab something from a from someone at the gym and just think you're doing it the right way. Maybe if you've done it for a long time and we know those levels and you look, I'm not going to condone anything like that because at the end of the day, I've fixed lots of my issues. I mean, I pulled out a sport because I broke my back over a long period and was in lots of pain on opioids and I got into peptides because people were cheating on them in sport.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I want to fix myself. I'm not playing sport anymore. And now I don't have any of those issues. And I've been using them and making my PhDs actually on some peptides that help to reduce inflammation in joints.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to have it.
And then you got, what's that injection they give you when you got the inflammation that's really bad for your stomach?
Like Ketorolac and there's a few
different
ones.
No, what's the most common cortisone. One? Cortisone.
Yeah. So, I mean, cortisone, like any steroid, helps to reduce inflammation. So it is good if you've got like tendons and ligaments and they have to slide and they've got inflamed for some reason and they're getting impinged. So they're getting basically squashed because of the inflammation. However, it doesn't help to heal. It doesn't help to regrow a tear and those sorts of things.
So it's just sort of a delay sort of a thing, is it?
A little bit. I mean, depends. It depends on what your injury is, but I think it has a great use for the right patient at the right time in the right area. However, for me, I've optimized my life a lot with other sorts of supplements.
You look like you're 22 years old.
That's unfair. I mean, nothing is original anymore, mate. From my nipples to my hairline. I made my face and body look like my brother's. They got the good genes.
Yeah, well, isn't that good? But it's so exciting. Like, you make medicine sound exciting. What's ahead, you know?
And I guess I'm getting more excited about it as well. And lots of the reasons why I'm going back to study is that I want to start talking about these things that doctors come under attack. I mean, any person can go put in an anonymous complaint and I get a call up from the governing body to say, you're under investigation, we'll get back to you in 2 months. I know so many doctors who have got terrible mental health because they've had a single complaint and then they're under investigation, which they don't even know what it's about.
Mm.
But, I mean, there's a lot of fear in medicine of trying new things without having lots and lots and lots of other doctors moving towards it. So it's about changing public opinion and public questioning so that they're asking those questions. And this is why we've got now psychedelics and things in Australia because
that's
people,
exciting.
And like and CBD and cannabis and like I'm not even saying have these things in a dosage that you are cognitively changed. Microdosing these sorts of things. I mean you don't feel vitamin C or collagen powder.
No.
But it's amazing. Like it's working in the background. You don't have to feel the things. Yes, there's some great results for some people who have got under the right circumstances to have a dosage that would put them into a wonderful state for a little while and be talked through. And there's some great examples of that. But for a lot of people, it's also very fearful. And I have lots, just as many patients, not just as many, but I know a lot of people who have had bad experiences from doing things like that, thinking they're doing the right thing too quickly. So I just say, look, find someone that you can chat to, find a GP that you can ask these questions of. If they're not that GP, and they're not going to question their own, and that's like a general practitioner or any practitioner, keep researching or send me some questions and I'll chat to you. And
how do the listeners get hold of you?
Through you. We'll give you them your number, right? That's it. No, I do a fair bit of telehealth stuff and have a few clinics around the country. So if you jump online and Google me, you'll be able to get an appointment and whatever else.
Google
and
Dr. Zach Turner or what? Tell us what they Google.
It's I think my website's getting updated. It's drzach.com. But if you just go Dr. Zach Turner, there'll be some links and. And
give him a follow and give him a follow on Insta and that. Really get behind. We've got to get, I think society has got to really push for people like yourself. Like you've got an open mind. You're not scared of these, you know what I mean? You're not scared to be shut down either. You've got thick skin.
Yeah, I mean, that's taken a lot of time. I mean, I've had lots of people put in anonymous complaints over the years about things I've said on radio and TV, and it is very terrifying at the beginning. Thankfully now, a lot of the things, I mean, when it's your first one, it's 100% of the time. Mm. Now that I've had 20 or 30 or 40 and I know the process and to go through it, but for doctors, it's still now, and I'm finishing my specialties, even after being a doctor for more than 10 years and having nursing and science and all that sort of stuff, finishing this off so you are more protected and you do have a body of colleagues that you can ask questions of. And I guess the biggest thing is going, cool, well, I mean, I'm only human hopefully not only human, let's become a bit more superhuman.
Let's are superhuman. You are, man. I'm really... I get to hang out with you on a social basis, and you are a ball of fun. What are the business interests do you have?
Oh gosh, trying to do less of those and focus a bit more on a couple of things. But I'm making a lot of products at the moment that we've been trying and testing for hair and skin and weight and energy. They'll be coming out over the next while, and I've been working a bit on a couple of TV shows that are around kind of like a Bear Grylls meets Mythbusters, where we can go and find the cool products, chuck them in the lab, see if they work, see on what population groups, because people jump on and start using something because their mate is. But they've got a completely different body type, they're like gender in whatever way. So it's about going, cool, having some trials where you can go, okay, that guy or that girl or that person I mean, we're all on this journey together, but that person I can kind of relate with, and they're having this result that I'd kind of like, so I might try this under these sort of circumstances. So I really want to be pushing down the path of finishing off these specialties. And I mean, I still work and do a little bit of GP stuff, which is great to keep doing that. And I do a fair bit of stuff in, like I said, the proactive performance and wellness and cosmetics and that sort of stuff as well.
You do that, but you go back to, you know, like, I mean, you're at this elite level of being a doctor with these, you know, famous people and everything like that, but I've been to your practice and it's just like every day mums and dads, and you're just in your element. It's like you don't treat them any different than you're treating a superstar that lives in Byron Bay. And maybe one or two of them.
Maybe. There's, I think that's one of the things I've tried to keep doing, because and maybe that's why I get on well with these guys, is that the treatment and the care is the same. I think that the fun part of medicine is going to be over the next few years, and certainly the kids coming out and a lot of the stuff that we're now finding that are going to optimize lives for a lot longer. And certainly the mental health side with, like, hopefully Alzheimer's and dementia.
Do you think we're going to get a cure to that?
Oh, cure or a prevention. Huge reduction, huge reduction. But a lot of this, I mean, there are lots of things that you do not have to spend money on. I mean, time and again, boxing, like, keeps coming up. Like, there is no better thing you could do for your health than doing boxing 3 times a week for 30 minutes.
I love hearing a doctor say that.
Nothing better. Strong mind, strong reflexes, strong body, flexibility.
You're my kind of doctor. I'd see young doctors coming through now, and look, and they're hearing about, you know, psychedelics for mental health. They're hearing about, you know, they're hearing about peptides for longevity and sort of that. Are they going to be better doctors than the ones that we've had, these old school, give you a Bex and?
Yeah, look, I very much hope that. Well, certainly, look, when I started uni, we didn't have the internet, or there weren't things online. Now, just the collation, like being able to collate the data and see results, and you used to have to go to conferences where you'd only get paper material. Mm. How the heck are you meant to know what someone else on the other side of the world is doing who's also fascinated? I mean, I'm lucky now because I get to have colleagues that are pushing boundary, like different areas of medicine and science. And then I can go, cool, that's actually been done, proven. Now, how can I implement that and prescribe this and put this into practice for my patients and myself? Yeah. That's the other thing. Like I said it before, but like charity starts at home, like you need to be caring for yourself and putting these things in place that, I always say, look, I'll stop prescribing things when I stop seeing a benefit in myself.
Yeah, wow, what a great attitude to have. Dr. Zach Turner, it's been a privilege and a pleasure having you on the Stick Up podcast, mate. I know it's been a big effort for you to get here and I appreciate you, man. Not just as a guest, but as a friend.
No, thank you. And look, I look forward to many, many, many more fun years.
Yeah, up on the farm.
Up on the farm. Love it.
Thank you for coming.